As Jim mentioned, I have the pleasure of serving as his project officer, CDC project officer. Just to give you a little bit of background, information about my background, I've been at CDC for a couple of years. Prior to coming to CDC, I was at the Division of Public Health in the state of Georgia, working as the school health coordinator. And I was there for many years. So my background, my training is in nursing. I am a certified nurse practitioner and work at CDC currently in the Division of Adolescent and School Health as a project officer. And so what I'd like to take time to do now is to give a very brief, broad overview of the Division of Adolescent and School Health and how we use our programs and our strategies to address the needs of LGBTQ youth. To begin with, the simple mission of DASH is to promote the health and well-being of children and adolescents so that they can become healthy and well-functioning adults. I have been soberly reminded during the last couple of days of this conference how complex the issue of STD prevention is. So there it's impossible for one division or one agency or organization to do all of the work. So the Division of Adolescent and School Health is one of several divisions within CDC that addresses the sexual risk behaviors of adolescents. However, we are the only division within CDC that directly funds departments of education rather than departments of health. Let me get an idea of who you guys represent. Anybody from education agency? Okay, great. Can I ask what state locals? University of Georgia. I saw a hand over here.
California Department of Education.
California, okay.
Okay, yay,
Georgia. What about public health? So the majority of folks here are public health, community-based organizations, and anything other than those three. Okay, great. So the Division of Adolescent School Health has four primary strategies, prevention strategies, and I want to spend some time talking about each one of these strategies. One is to monitor the STD HIV risk behaviors, school policies, and programs. The other one is we fund states, local education agencies, tribal governments, and territories to develop programs and policies. Of course, we do behavioral research to add to the science of what is effective in terms of policies and programs. And we are committed to reaching youth that are at highest risk for STD HIV infections. So let's look at how we monitor risk behaviors. Most of you mentioned earlier or acknowledged earlier that you are familiar with the YRBS survey. It is done at the national, state, and local level. It's collected every other year, odd years, so the next year that we'll be doing the YRBS is 2011, and I'll be showing some examples of what those data sets look like from 2007 data. And we look at those risk behaviors of high school students and middle school students around diet, physical activity, heightened weight, safety and violence-related behaviors, tobacco use behaviors, alcohol and other drug use, and sexual risk behaviors. The specific questions related to STD HIV risk behaviors have to do with the frequency of sexual intercourse, if they have had sexual intercourse with four or more partners, the condom use questions, alcohol and drug use questions, as well as IV drug use, participation in HIV education at school, and HIV testing. In 2009, there were 12 states and 6 districts that asked some additional questions related to sexual minority questions. And they ranged from same-sex sexual behavior to asking students if they could identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, questions that have to do with both behavior and identity, and then Hawaii asked questions around same-sex attraction, assuming that these kids had not acted upon their attraction, but they did acknowledge that they had same-sex attractions. This slide shows the percentage of high school students who ever had sexual intercourse, and it's organized by sex and race ethnicity. As you can see, the overall prevalence is 47.8%, with males being more than females, and black students more than white or Hispanic students. This slide shows the percentage of high school students who have ever had sexual intercourse, and we can see that this trend has gone down from 1991 to 2007, that there was a linear decrease identified. And then the percentage of high school students who used a condom during their last sexual intercourse, looking at data from 1991 to 2007, and we can see that there was a pretty steady linear increase from 1991, and then from 2001 to 2007, it sort of flattened out. So it'll be interesting to see what our 2011 data will show.
How accurate do you think the data is as far as what students are told about filling out this survey? Mm-hmm.
Well, this is self-reported data, and there have been some reliability and validity work that's done to really show that these students are reporting fairly accurately. Confidentiality is explained on the front end. The test is administered in a very prescriptive fashion to ensure that the respondents' confidentiality is maintained. But it is self-reported data. Another way to look at the YRBS data, this slide shows the percentage of high school students who ever had sexual intercourse by state. So states can look at how they compare to other states in their region or nationally. They can also look at how they move closer or further away from the median. Probably a little bit less familiar to you is the SHIPS survey, School Health Policies and Program Study. How many of you are familiar with that survey? Okay, great. Not as many of you as the YRBS survey. But the SHIPS survey is done every 6 years, and there are plans to do a 2012 survey. It is a national survey. It looks at school health policies and programs at the state, district, school, and classroom levels. And these questions are organized around the 8-component model of coordinated school health that I'll talk about a little bit later. To give you some example of what we capture in this survey, this slide shows the percentage of schools that require teaching of health topics by school level, and it's no surprise to see that as the grade levels increase, the topics around HIV prevention, STD prevention, and pregnancy prevention goes up from middle to high school.
Is that comprehensive and abstinence included, or is it one versus the other?
It's
with regard to prevention, I mean, is it?
Mm-hmm. It's not, it's about prevention, and it's all inclusive. Of abstinence and non-abstinence. The question doesn't delineate the two. This slide shows the percentage of high school students in which teachers taught specific human sexuality and HIV prevention. How to correctly use a condom, 50% in 2000, down to 38% in 2006, and then sexual identity and sexual orientation topics. 59% in 2000 and down to 48% in 2006. Not sure what might be going on there, but I'll leave you to figure that out. And then lastly, the profile survey, which is school health profiles. This survey is done every other year, opposite years that we do YRBS. So this survey is done on the even years. 2008 was the last school health profile survey. And these are done at the state and large urban areas to look at school policies and practices. This slide shows the percentage of schools that taught 8 key HIV, STD, and pregnancy prevention topics in a required course during the high school years, typically 9, 10, 11, and 12. So the darker states are the states where more schools taught 8 key components. 75 to 100% are reflected in the darker states. And then the states that are whited have no data or did not have weighted data. This slide shows the percentage of schools that taught how to access valid and reliable health information and products and services related to HIV and STD pregnancy prevention in a required course. Again, New Mexico, Louisiana, and good old Georgia did not have weighted data in 2008. The percentage of schools that taught 3 key topics related to condom use in a required course during the high school years. And this course is comprehensive, including how to use a condom, how to obtain a condom, the advantages of using a condom, community services that students can access. I find this slide very interesting, coming from a health education background and working in schools as a school nurse. This slide looks at the percentage of schools in which the lead health education teacher received professional development during the 2 years before this survey was done. And we can see that most of the country, less than 50% of teachers say that they have received professional development. So this speaks to a huge opportunity that many of our programs have realize that they can do professional development, because that's a need that's not being met. Any speculations to why teachers aren't getting PD in this area? There goes a hand real quick.
Well,
what do you think?
In our state, North Carolina, some of the administrative supports aren't there for the teachers to attend specific HIV or STD or sexuality professional development from the local levels. The opportunities may be there for teachers, but if they don't have the support to get substitute,
the administrative support, yeah,
and
right.
If it's required, then they won't be able to attend.
Absolutely, yeah. And what we hear from teachers, health education teachers, is that the priority on those core academic subjects, the math, science, social studies, language arts. So it's a real challenge to get PD in this topic on the calendar. Thank you. And then we look at percentages of schools with a gay-straight alliance or a similar club. And we can see, again, the states that did not have weighted data, but that GSAs or similar clubs are quite prevalent on the West Coast and the Northeast. We've still got some work to do in the other areas. Did I see a hand? Was that a stretch? Okay, yes.
Well, actually, I mean, I'm just a little surprised by some of the data. I manage HIV STD prevention in Texas at the State Health Department. But we had a report came out in Texas fairly recently that doesn't really jive with some of that data on teaching specific aspects of condoms. In fact, it was something like 95% of them only taught failure rates. It just surprised me that I'd never heard of this survey. Interested to look into it.
Yep. And there's information about the methodology on the CDC-Healthy Youth website.
Right.
The survey is, the respondents to the survey at the national level, at the state level, can be the, typically the education agency, but it's not uncommon for if there is an active role of the health departments. For instance, when I was in Georgia, I completed the health services component of the survey. Another question, another hand? Okay. So let's move on to the funding aspect of what we do. DASH funds state education and local education agencies as well as tribal and territorial governments for HIV prevention through a cooperative agreement process. And this current cooperative agreement began in 2008. It goes for 5 years to 2013. We fund all states except for Utah, as well as the local cities that you see on the left. The overall purpose of this funding is to promote and improve the health and educational outcomes of youth through school health programs. There is an increasing body of science, increasing body of research to support the link between health and academic achievement. The priorities for this funding, there are five priorities. HIV prevention is among the five priorities, but we also fund states to do a YRBS survey, to do coordinated school health with a particular focus around physical activity, nutrition, and tobacco use prevention, asthma management, and then we fund two sites for national professional development. I mentioned earlier the coordinated school health model. How many of you are familiar with this approach to school health programs and policies? Okay, so this may be some new information. Coordinated school health is a model approach to addressing health issues K through 12. There are eight components to the model. As you can see, health education, which deals with the sequential education curriculum in the classroom, family and community involvement, health promotion for the staff, and this one component, health promotion for the staff, is one that many school systems, when they have trouble or challenges getting in to address any of these other components, sometimes starting with the staff, can get them some buy-in so that they can do other work. Because we know that when staff feel good about themselves and they understand the importance of health, they're more likely to support programming for their students. Health and safe school environment, counseling and psychological services, nutrition services, health services, and physical education. So you can take an issue like HIV, ST prevention, apply it to this model, and really take a coordinated or more coordinated approach to addressing it within the school and community setting. The cooperative agreement emphasizes the importance of using data to drive programs and decisions. Our funded partners have spent tedious hours developing a 5-year strategic plan that includes a logic model, clear work plan objectives. We also ask that they address health and education disparities, because we know that the factors that contribute to education disparities also contribute to health disparities. Prior to this funding cycle, we noticed that schools were doing a lot of different things, and we say that they were doing work that was a mile wide and an inch deep. With this cooperative agreement that began in 2008, we wanted to kind of change that focus and change that trend and encourage states and local education agencies, tribal governments, and territories to work an inch wide and a mile deep. We wanted to really see and be able to impact at the building level that was closest to the student. So we developed some measures that we call SLIMs, which are school level impact measures. And this particular SLIM 10 is a fairly new SLIM that directly relates to the LGBTQ population, what schools are actually doing at the school building level to impact this population. So there are six areas or six components of this school level measure. The first one is, does the school have a curriculum or materials that are inclusive of LGBTQ students? Does the school promote safe places? So is it a policy or a practice where students know that counselors or teachers, specific teachers, may be a safe place? And Jim, I wanted to ask you to bring a door sign. One thing that APA under Jim's leadership has developed is a little doorknob sign that can be hung on a counselor's door or a teacher's door to say, this is a safe place. You know, I've had specific training around LGBTQ issues. I'm prepared to meet your needs. And many schools have taken this on to identify those safe places. Are there policies that prohibit harassment? We know that most school districts have bullying policies. Many school districts have gone back and revised those policies to include specific language around sexual orientation and gender identity. Does the school have a process to facilitate linking students to services outside of the school setting? Health services, psychological, social services, is there a way that the school can link to the community? And does the school encourage staff development around this topic and helping teachers meet the needs of LGBTQ students? We also fund national non-governmental organizations for HIV prevention among youth. We fund NGOs to help our states and local agencies build their capacity to address the needs. We also fund non-governmental organizations to promote sexual abstinence for community-based organizations or organizations that serve youth and parents. And these are the organizations we fund for abstinence. So moving on to our research, our funded partners, either through our state-funded partners, through education agencies, and our NGOs, are not funded to do research. So we have a separate funding stream to actually do our research and evaluation projects. Linking Lives is an evaluation project that looked at parent-based intervention around sexual risk behaviors, reducing sexual risk behaviors, and preventing tobacco use among African-American and Latino adolescents. The All About Youth Evaluation Project compared sexual risk avoidance and sexual risk reduction interventions among predominantly Hispanic, Latino, and African American middle school students. And then the Seattle Schools Climate Program looked at gay-straight alliances, evaluated gay-straight alliances' role in creating a safer environment. And then lastly, taking a look at how we reach out to those youth at highest risk. We fund NGOs to specifically address the needs of youth at high risk. Girls Incorporated, Advocates for Youth, AIDS Alliances is charged with addressing African American and Latino youth. Education Training Resource Associates, or ETR as they are commonly known as, are funded to work with juvenile justice facilities or alternative schools. National Network for Youth, we fund to look at runaway and homeless youth. And I was in a presentation last week that really gave some staggering numbers of youth that attend school every day that are homeless. So this is a huge population that have lots of needs. And then we fund the American Psychological Association to specifically look at African American and Latino males' YMSM population. In addition to funding our NGOs, the CDC Division of Adolescent and School Health supports an LGBTQ joint work group. And this work group consists of not only the NGOs, but members from states and local education agencies and other divisions within CDC to look at to provide a forum for discussing, making sure that we have a pulse on what's happening in schools across the nation, looking at the research, identifying gaps in our research and opportunities to work with some constituents around improving their program and policies. So I've covered the prevention strategies from DASH. Any questions before we transition back to Jim? Mm-hmm.
Does DASH, you mentioned there was a survey to find out how many schools incorporated LGBT appropriate materials in their education. Mm-hmm. Are there, does DASH have curricula that they use or that they make available to schools?
Mm-hmm. So the question is, does DASH provide curricula to schools? And the answer is no. We do help schools through a tool that has just been released in the last year and a half, the HECAT, which is a health education assessment tool, so that schools can use this tool that has been developed by DASH to evaluate their curriculum. Based on national health education standards. So we don't provide curricula to schools. Every funded HIV-funded site is required to have an HIV review panel, and that panel serves to review the schools so that schools have the ability to address their local issues and concerns with what gets put into the curriculum. Yes. Yes. Great question. So the question is, how do you connect with our funded partners? Well, first of all, our website has a link. A contact person is provided, name and email address on our website for each of our funded priority areas and each of our funded sites, our states as well as our NGOs. So the information is right there on the website. If you have trouble finding it, email me, and I can also link you either with a project officer or with the program director in that particular location.
Mm-hmm. I have another question about the SLIM, the School Level Impact Measure.
Yes.
Number 10. So these are new measures that you're incorporating in your evaluation.
Yes. Well, SLIM number 10 is new. The data that supports the SLIM is from the School Health Profile Survey, and there are questions that will be in the next round of profile survey in the next even year to feed into that particular SLIM.
So once you DASH does the profile.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
Different states and how states or even
yes.
Local education agencies measure up to the SLIM?
Absolutely. Right. Yep. There is a profile question that's associated with each SLIM measure. So we will have that data, and we're excited about that. Yep. Great. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We should mention that for the SLIMs, you know, the school profile data, it goes to,
mm-hmm.
It's not always the best health teacher who really does know who has gone to trainings and who hasn't. And, you know, oftentimes it's not always the best principal, meaning the principal assigns it to the lowest level vice principal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sometimes the newest person on staff. And I can tell you, you know, from California, I mean, we And they get this survey and they say, oh, you know, I just don't care. You know, not realizing what data we get from this and how important this is to us not only as a state but nationally to look. I mean, that slide about, you know, not getting enough training, I mean, holy cow, right? We need that. We need that to show that, you know, our teachers need to get trained so that they're, you know, using the most medically accurate scientific information in the classroom. So I would say, as someone who works really hard on the profiles, you know, ask how you can help out, because, you know, it's really important to get the message out to schools that they need to take this survey very seriously, and they need to not delineate it down to the lowest level health teacher who's right out of college and is like, have you got trained? I don't know, no. You know, that's not really accurate, and yet we rely so much on this data. Stressing to them that we really need the right person in every building to fill it out, because that otherwise, you know, we're not going to have an accurate picture.
Yeah, good point. Yes. Question back?
And I'm sorry, I may have missed it, but I'm just curious to know, how do you determine, I guess, what areas of the country that you go to in order to do these surveys? I mean, are you only doing it in certain areas?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you determine? Because I'm in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and we work with the schools. We're a community-based organization that works with the school, which is also an extension of our local health department. So we kind of work as an extension of them. But how do you determine what schools you're going to go to actually offer this? And I mean, how does it get selected?
Mm-hmm. Well, schools, first of all, school districts decide whether or not they want to do the survey. Our funded partners are strongly encouraged to do the survey as part of their evaluation process. But it's totally left up to them to do it or not.
Because I don't even know if they, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. if they're even aware of it, you know? So
mm-hmm.
how do you mm-hmm. just even find out if you can get started?
Kansas, where are you from?
Kansas City.
We
have an agency in Missouri and Kansas, so we just kind of put them online.
Okay.
Missouri and Kansas.
Okay. Well, as you saw in the slide, all the states except for Utah are funded for HIV prevention.
Correct.
So your state would be doing the profile survey. I don't think that, and there are some select large urban districts like New York City, Newark, some counties in Florida, San Francisco. Large urban school districts also do the survey, but every state should have some profiles data. And you can see the years on the website, on the Healthy Youth website, the trend years are there, so you can see if your state had weighted data for that year. We only report and post the weighted data. But if you need some help finding that, feel free to shoot me an email.
Mm-hmm. The decrease in schools of teaching about condoms
mm-hmm.
and about sexual identity issues.
Yes.
So do you have that on the website so we can look
at it? It is on the website, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because we're community advocates for our LGBT youth, so that's the kind of data we can use to advocate.
Right, yeah.
Change.
Yeah, it is on the website. And if I'm not mistaken, because I am not the data expert in my division, let me make that disclaimer, there is a way that you can query, so you can compare 1 year to the next year, and you can compare states to state. I know that exists for YRBS, and I believe it's for SHIPS as well.
Mm-hmm. I was struck by two of your data slides, the decrease in teaching about condom use, and there was also a slide that showed a decrease in sexual intercourse from 2001 to 2007.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those slides don't match up
mm-hmm.
from our point of view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
during the 2001 to 2007 period,
mm-hmm.
that data could support that they were doing the right thing.
Interesting. Yeah. Any other thoughts about that?
I think the body of evidence is really clear, yeah. Despite this last couple of years, the Jamaat study, that, you know, there's been no, you know, no fundamental behavioral change for absence on it. So, more, you know, continue.
Did we all hear that comment? Thank you.